Science Faction is a science education podcast for adults only. There is frequent nudity.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 223, Science Faction Entomology.
That is the study of insects.
It is, actually. That is a weirdly accurate thing for you to say.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Jeopardy sinks in once in a while.
Yeah, I want to specify this is entomology with an N, not etymology, in which Dr. Ava would have been an expert in. That would be the study of words. Etymology.
Oh, etymology.
Right, so we're talking about entomology with an N, which is the study of insects. And it's a branch of zoology concerned specifically with insects. Entomology has kind of a long storied history in general science, especially like the naturalist gentlemen of the 17th and 18th century.
It's a great science for really picking out the weirdos in a culture. Like people would say, like,
it is.
I want to study the cockroach because, like, yeah. I'm like most people, when a cockroach is on them, they find that unpleasant.
Yeah.
But I get aroused.
Yeah.
And so I kind of think I can get paid for this.
Keeps making misnomers. They're like, this is the Madagascar hissing cockroach.
They can dance around a urethra, finger for hours.
Oh, man.
It is kind of a weird guy thing to do, is to go do it. You know, it's a funny story. I knew somebody who studied butterflies and moths. That was her graduate study program. She was a very attractive young lady, and she had the misfortune of being surrounded by all these really creepy dudes, including one of her professors, who was an entomology professor. And this science, similar to archaeology, you have to go out in the field and actually collect bugs. So you spend time like in a truck with people or camping or doing whatever. You're not just in a professional lab setting. So it became incredibly uncomfortable when he asked her to read a novel that he had just written. And she's like, okay, fine, cool. And she read it. And it was like the Indiana Jones version of an entomologist, where he's off solving crimes and like going on adventures.
Okay, first off, from a literary standpoint, structure me a plot where an entomologist is needed in any way, shape, or form.
He ended up stopping a nuclear attack, by the way.
No fucking
yes,
way.
Yes, he did.
Was a giant venomous spider?
No, they were sneaking it across the border while he was doing his field research, and he caught them trying to sneak the nuke across.
So it had nothing to do with his profession. He just...
No, he was out there doing field work, and then he caught them. But so it was super awkward for her, because as she was reading it, the love interest for this like 45-year-old professor, which is very clearly the guy who wrote it, like has written himself into the script. The love interest is a young researcher, her exact age and physical description, with two letters of her name switched.
Ooh.
So is this
and
like
he describes passionate sexual encounters. And he's like, so what do you think of the book?
Did she finish?
Were you hot and bothered by it?
Yeah.
Would this be like the equivalent if you introduced me as Mamian Durkato?
Yeah. Yeah, and I had a weird fan fiction about stuff. Like, that's what he did. And then he's just like, so what'd you think of the book? And she's like,
he wearing when he revealed that? Because, like, keep in mind,
it's a loincloth made out of butterfly wings.
Only two dudes could find that hilarious.
No, this is a horrible, a toxic work environment for her.
She found it pretty funny later when she was telling me the story.
Well, later, right?
Like, well, here's the best part. So she told me the story, and she was laughing, and she was like, this is horrible. And I was like, I looked the guy up online, found him, and then I sent him a note from a fake email address I created saying, hey, I collect science-based fiction. Somebody told me you might have something for me. Can you send it to me if you're interested? And he's like, well, yeah, sure. And he sent it to me. And then I excerpted it and brought it the next day to work and would just read it out loud. she was very amused.
How many sex scenes were in this book? Was it like
multiple sex scenes? Yeah.
Like, can we talk about entomology?
So anyway.
How many bug sex scenes were in this book?
No.
Long story short, don't try and bang your grad students, but... regardless, yes.
Or undergrads.
Yes, or undergrads.
Oh, come on, you're a female teacher. You'd be welcome if you... There's nothing illegal about you banging grad students.
There's nothing unethical about it. Yeah.
You could be like an awesome Mary Kay Letourneau.
It's like their boss. Yeah, it's like their boss. She controls their grade. It's a hegemonic power imbalance.
And?
And she doesn't fit into the butterfly loincloth anymore.
Hey, what? Yes, I do.
Entomology has been practiced by the greats like Darwin, who was very famously a beetle collector. If Darwin could do anything for his entire life, he loved collecting beetles. He would just sit around and collect and describe beetle species.
Yeah, Ringo Starr is still caught in the Darwin Museum.
Entomology has this long history. It also sometimes depends on whether or not you talk to a really stingy entomologist who will get mad if you ask
the Ebenezer Scrooge. Yeah.
Maybe stingy is the wrong word. A very strict one. They'll get mad if you ask if they study spiders, because those are arachnids and they would not be studied by an entomologist. Thank you very much.
So wait, is there a separate competing? Are they the evil entomologists to study arachnids?
Yeah, they're the
like ticks?
Yeah, they're the ones who stop chemical warheads from coming across the border.
I'm amazed at how much amusement you draw out of entomology.
It has to be found somewhere. First off, we mined archaeology years ago. Like anything man-related, we're finally talking about bugs. This is our first time. We just opened a new can of tuna.
It's also like one of the first sciences that a lot of naturalists get into when they're young, because as a kid, you can go and collect bug specimens. It's very easy to get a decent collection up and running. You can then look
by
up.
By that, my sons would be geologists because...
Yes, they collect a lot of rocks, right?
Yeah
that
do.
Works. That's one of those starter ones as well.
Do you think those kids get a pass? Like, for example, kids who collect dead animals?
Yeah, they're
labeled as psychopaths when they could be great physicians.
They do get a pass, and here's why. The reason we think it's wrong to torture animals like cats or whatever is because they have a central nervous system. They experience pain. That person is trying to cause suffering because they get some kind of value out of the suffering of others. Whereas somebody's collecting insects, they don't have that same central nervous system. They don't experience that same pain. So you're not like torturing them. You might be killing them, and that might be bad for the environment or something, but they're not experiencing the same type of torture that a cat does if you set it on fire.
You know what? It's that attitude is why we don't have any more bees.
Yeah.
People just go out.
It's a bunch of bug collectors just nailing bees to pegboards. That's what's killing them.
You're allowing a purge of bees every fucking day. Yeah. Apologist.
Oh my.
But it's a very interesting subject because more and more we're finding a lot of the toxins that are carried by these stinging insects, especially, they have medical uses.
You say toxins, is this in like a Gwyneth Paltrow way?
No, like an actual toxin. You can find that things like the sting from bees and wasps can be used in certain kind of anti-inflammatory things. We're finding more and more heart medication that comes from certain types of insects. We know that if we have something like mosquito, which is an insect that causes us a lot of problems, we can then release a bunch of sterile mosquitoes, which are engineered by entomologists, so that they can then breed with them and eradicate that mosquito population.
Okay, quick question. I hate to cut blue on this. This isn't my thing.
I know you don't like doing that.
On this show, I love to keep it clean. This is a family show and all. But is there a way to harvest bee venom in a way that perhaps is effective to all, not just those who are blessed with an allergy to bees?
But well, those aren't the only people who get stung by bees.
I'm saying, is there a way to, like, you know, like when a bee bites you, especially if you're allergic, you enlarge, is there a way to use this for penile enlargement? For those of us out there who may need it. I'm not saying me, but like perhaps other people who don't want to grind up rhino horn anymore because they find it terribly ineffective.
First of all, we all know you love grinding up rhino horn. It's your favorite part of the whole thing.
It's namaste. It's part of my ritual.
The only thing that has a bigger nose than me, I'll show you.
Not anymore.
I'm really happy that I don't get all the references.
We're not even to articles yet. This is just, we've already offended
Dr. Exactly.
She's already tapped out.
I think we should move on. And I also want to say, I'm really happy that my children collect rocks and locks. So if anyone ever comes across a cool kind of padlock, they should send it to me.
That is what a psychopath collects.
Yeah, you have a young thief on your hand.
Yeah, he's going to be either a locksmith or a robber.
We joked last time you were here about somebody convincing your kids that you're an international antiquities thief.
No, you would want that to happen.
That'd be awesome, and I think you could totally pull it off. But beside the point, I think your kid believes it, and now he's studying to be like mom.
And speaking of somebody who's like mom, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Ricciardo. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. And you are like your mom. You are a confused Hungarian. And I am like my mom, and that I'm an angry Mexican who beats children mercilessly.
Yeah. By the way, you are still banned from Chuck E. Cheese.
Listen, there are children misbehaving. I grew up with a Mexican mom. I just thought you could beat children who you disapproved of.
Damien refers to the ball pit in Chuck E. Cheese as the octagon.
Here's the thing about like being a human and being a Mexican mom, like once I use both of my shoes, I'd have to reload. Like I'm like I've exhausted my ammunition.
What, has she thrown the bandolero at you already, or
a bandolier of shoes?
And our scientist for the evening, Dr. Ava. Doctor, how you doing?
I'm questioning my life choices.
Yeah, you should have collected more bugs. Yeah. And of course,
beat your children more.
You can check out all of our life choices at our website, www.thesciencefaction.com, or you can tweet us at Faction Science. But for now, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Article number one, is handwriting study total BS?
Like, is handwriting as a science BS?
Yeah, like the study of handwriting and being able to compare it across populations.
Was there ever a time where it wasn't?
Well, it's used in court, and it is something that...
Oh, that kind of... Yes. I thought you were talking about concluding to your personality traits.
Oh, no. We're talking about somebody being
comparative
able...
Comparative handwriting.
Yeah, and estimating the rarity of that comparative. So, like...
I see. Okay.
This person swoops their U's like this, and this is only true in 5% of the population.
Dr. Ava, if I were to walk into the handwriting or whatever science this falls under department at UCSD campus, would they speak of the linguistics department just as dismissively as you speak of them?
No, they talk about entomology that way.
Weird dudes with bugs.
I think they would probably, if such a thing existed, they might be a subdivision of the linguistics department or of criminology, right? But I don't think we have criminology.
Sorry, I was just imagining that entomology guy stinging himself in the penis over and over again. It's a little penis stinging Bill.
This is that same professor, like who...
Guys!
No, it's the butterfly professor.
Handwriting.
I don't normally work with bees.
Indeed. So this is interesting. Now, I want to start off with our usual caveats. Small N number on this study. They looked at 18 specialists in handwriting analysis, and they compared them with 77 randomly selected members of the general population. They basically had all of these people look at handwriting analysis and try and compare which things are similar, which people might have written the same notes, but also give their estimation as to how rare a specific thing is. For instance, this looks like this. And based on the amount of people in the population who write this way, we would estimate that there's a 1 in 100 chance that this would not be the same person or something along those lines. When they did that, what they found is the handwriting quote-unquote experts are only marginally, essentially almost not at all better than the random people you pulled off the street. Initially, what the article states is, well, that proves it's total BS. It doesn't necessarily, because it can also prove, just that particular fact alone, it could prove that this is actually so easy that even a random person can do it with high accuracy.
So what was the baseline, what was the ground truth, right?
Whether or not two pieces of writing were or were not written by the same person.
But how about the estimation of how rare it is?
So I guess you would have to be comparing it to known standards or known amounts of writing.
Yeah, so that makes me think that the handwriting experts really weren't doing their job properly, no?
Well, yeah, and it makes it
seem... If there is such a ground truth out there, and they don't have
knowledge towards it. I think they were probably the percentage of it within their sample. So they had some sample of a whole bunch of writing, and then they would estimate it, assuming it's a random generated sample, it should reflect the population more broadly.
Sounds like such a weird study.
It is, but here's why it's interesting, because a lot of this stuff is used in court and is used very definitively to the extent where they say, you know, we can be almost completely certain this person wrote this note or this person signed this check. And obviously, we've all seen people where that's true. Look at my handwriting. It is impossible to mistake for anybody else's because I have the worst handwriting on earth.
Yeah, everybody thinks they're unique.
Yeah, well, no, if you saw my handwriting, you'd be like,
this person is psychopathic. Yeah. An expert saw this, like, this person, hold on, we need to find this
every
man.
Week, it's
they're
not that
they're
bad.
Like, who let this 3-year-old in here, and why do they keep writing dick everywhere?
I'd love for them to see this man's an autistic man who's killed and will kill again.
There is this thing where we are bringing people in as expert testimony, and I kind of equate it back to the polygraph in terms of the perception of the general public versus the actual accuracy to what it is. We talked before about how polygraphs are essentially guesswork. Polygraphs do not at all measure whether or not you're lying. The biggest advantage of a polygraph is that people tend to think they work, and so they admit the truth before because they get hooked up and they're like, oh shit, I'm about to be found out. I got a level with you, blah, 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 blah. That's the biggest way polygraphs work. Now, you do get nervous sometimes when you lie, and it will detect your nervousness, but it's detecting nervousness, not whether or not you're lying.
Well, I'd love it if they mixed up the good cop, bad cop element that they have sometimes with the polygraph and had like a good handwriting expert, bad handwriting expert. Sullivan says he saw you writing forging the letter himself.
It's got big loops on the O.
Sorry, my partner. He can get a little crazy.
when that happens, people can get convicted on that kind of testimony. And the idea is this real science? And we've seen this type of stuff that happened before. We've had issues before with carpet fiber testing, where for a while, 60s, 70s, 80s, we had these quote-unquote scientific experts come and say, look, I can tell definitively that this piece of carpet or this string came from this piece of carpet, and I can tell that by analyzing carpet fibers. And they were allowed for decades in the court system, and it ended up putting a lot of people in jail that later got exonerated by DNA.
You know, in America, like, you can't be smart and be a cop.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Right.
Do you think, like, basically...
You're talking about because there's an IQ cap. Many police...
Yeah, that was the first episode I was ever on, and I was just blown
it's
away.
It's not all
yeah.
departments.
Welcome to fucking hee-haw country.
It's not all departments, but many police departments have an IQ cap where they will not allow people above a certain IQ to join.
Now, when they have that, so essentially, in order to be an expert for the police, you just have to be smarter than the cop.
No, because they bring in outside experts. Most of the people who are testifying aren't cops themselves. They are outside scientific experts. But that does touch on a good point, which is these people make money for their testimony, right? So if you are a person who is a quote-unquote handwriting expert, it is to your fiscal advantage. Some might say even fiscal need, if this is your only means of supporting yourself, to continue asserting that this is not only a useful tool, but that you are very sure and definitive about things, even when you're not. Because if you're not, if you became very honest and said, I mean, it looks very similar, but there's an 80% chance it could be somebody else too. If you were to say that, you wouldn't get hired the next time around by the prosecution to make that point.
Then maybe you should learn another profession.
Yeah.
Be like the honest prostitute. Like, no, you're not really the best I've ever had. I mean, truth be told, I have thousands of Johns a day. And
well, there's a very famous case of a woman.
Many with far less bee stings on their genitals.
There's a famous case of a woman who went through a holistic medicine school, and she was very much a believer. She went through all 4 years. She took out like $200,000 in loans to do Jeez. So. And then basically got to the end and realized this is total bullshit. This is all complete placebo effect and total BS.
Is that what you get for getting your doctorate in holistic medicine? Yeah. Like, hey, we'll let you know the secret.
I did something really stupid yesterday on a whim. I got acupuncture.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, the placebos
there you
work.
Go. Yeah.
No, it was not. I was the worst acupuncture patient ever because I have terrible neck pain.
Uh-huh.
And so she stuck the needles in my arm and she's like, oh, that's your gallbladder. And it's like, no, it's not.
No, it's not.
Not at all.
What do you do? Point to my gallbladder. Point to it right now because it's not my fucking elbow, lady.
Would she look like somebody who you think would be a hairstylist if she wasn't sticking people
with
needles?
Well, the young lady who went through the holistic medicine school, she had to abandon this very lucrative practice, by the way, because it's really easy to make money when you're selling nothing. When you're,
yes.
when you're... prescriptions are water you got out of the tap.
Yeah, stupid people hate going to a doctor and feeling dumb.
Yeah,
yeah, they'll pay a lot of money to not do that.
It's very easy to do that. And so she was making money and paying off this extensive amount of student loans. And she basically said, I can't do this anymore. Like, morally, I can't do it anymore. And then came out and started speaking against that kind of holistic medicine practice and has gotten sued into oblivion by the people she took the courses from and now still owes $200,000 to.
But what do you sue? Like, I mean, because honestly, in court, like, if she says these are false practices,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They take you to court. You have to get a lawyer. You have to go to court, you risk losing a lot of money. It's like a big deal for her. So there's actually support systems.
You fell in love with Scientology. We don't care what happens.
I'm not entirely sure whether they ever made any claim that this is scientifically valid, right? I think they're probably very careful in how they set it up to say.
I mean,
that
certain
it's a
ones definitely do
healing.
You know, it would
practice.
Depend what her school said. Certain ones certainly do, though. They say this maybe. This will cure cancer or this will do this. Now,
but then they probably debate the meaning of science.
Yeah, absolutely. Or the meaning of, well, it did cure it in this 5% of cases, and they're like, yeah, but that's what we would expect from random chance too. And they're like, yeah, we did it.
In that same vein, can we expect a video from Michelle Bachmann's husband about how pray away the gay camps don't work? Like, don't listen to, I've become a master of this martial art and I still love the dick.
Every time he's on TV, he's doing that ad. Whether or not he knows it. Those camps don't work. Very interesting stuff. We'll see where it goes from here, but I do like to look back in kind of history. You know, whether you're talking about phrenology, which was also used in courts, by the way. They would
as a legitimate science, which it still is.
They would sentence people differently because they'd say, based on the shape of your head, you are not going to be rehabilitatable, and so you have to stay in jail and blah, blah, blah. Same crime, different person's different skull shape, you can get out. it is interesting to see the courts and where they are with scientific acceptance, when they take things in, when they don't. I usually think they are too hesitant to take things on. Took them a long time to adopt DNA standards and techniques that we had in science since the 80s.
And OJ still got off.
Yeah, but in the same time, sometimes they do allow kind of charlatans to come in. So very, very interesting. We will keep our eyes on this and see, because I bet you we will see at least three or four more studies on this within the next year, because this type of stuff makes enough noise. On to article number two. The monovirus has been linked to 7 different autoimmune diseases. Super, super interesting. The Epstein-Barr virus, which causes what we colloquially refer to as mono or mononucleosis. You guys might have heard this called the kissing disease. You essentially are out for sometimes up to a month. Some people get it really bad. And it's basically a bad flu that you get for a very long time. Viral-based, it does get transferred very easily from kissing because it's got a high content in saliva, mm-hmm. unlike a lot of other viruses. And
but not from anal, kids. Yeah. You heard it here. Avoid
Jesus.
Mono. I'm sorry. I'm trying to practice a non-abstinence sex education course on this program. I'm
non-abstinence only.
I'm sorry that Lone Star State Dr. Ava over here is objecting to my curriculum.
So Epstein-Barr is the virus that causes mono. Again, very, very contagious. And autoimmune diseases are things where your body's attacking itself. We've all heard of these before. Crohn's is a big one. Arthritis. Type 1 diabetes. These are all different types where your immune system is attacking different parts of your body. Well, what's really interesting is some researchers were looking at lupus, and they were finding that over and over again, almost everybody who's ever had lupus at some point had mono. And it seemed to be a statistical anomaly, because while mono is common, sometimes it's up to 90% of people in the population have had it. It is not common enough to account for the ubiquitousness of the infection rate among people who have lupus. So they started looking at both lupus and then other autoimmune diseases to see if maybe this virus is somehow training our immune system to attack our own body, which we know can happen with certain types of infections. And they found a really interesting correlation, which is, again, science faction warning, right now, to this point, only a correlation. But what they have found is that Epstein-Barr virus seems to be linked to systematic lupus, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, juvenile arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease, celiac disease, and type 1 diabetes.
So not only is Seal's face lupus scarred covered, but he probably is riddled with Crohn's disease and all the other things you mentioned.
Well, this is crazy.
And he still landed high.
Because lupus can really affect your life. It can be a long-term thing that causes a lot of problems. Obviously, arthritis causes people a lot of problems. Celiacs can be really bad. But MS is a totally different ballgame. Yeah, I mean, MS is a
really
life
awful.
Shortener. And
yeah.
The idea that this virus, you might have this virus when you're 3 or 4 or 5, and whatever happens, it trains your immune system to then, in that case, attack the myelin sheath that's on your nerves. In other cases, obviously go after something in your pancreas for the type 1 diabetes, or bowels for Crohn's disease, or your joints for arthritis. That's terrifying, because it means that this thing that's all around us in society that we think of as a nuisance that will put you out of school for a few weeks might actually permanently affect the rest of your life.
Is there any cure?
For mono?
Or any, like, vaccine?
There's no cure. I would imagine there could be a vaccine. I have not seen anything researched on it or written on it, because once you get mono, you usually can't get it again. So that implies that you have some kind of long-lasting immune effect. My question would be, would the vaccine have the same response? Because think about it. What's hurting you with the autoimmune disease? It's not the virus itself. It's that the virus has then changed your immune system to fight off something. If you had the exact same immune system change with a vaccine, I wonder if the vaccine would do it as well.
So wait, this can cause type 1 diabetes?
Possibly. We're not sure yet. Right now, strong correlation.
So somebody could go to college and leave with type 1 diabetes and a degree, and they might be blaming their freshman 15 for why they're now diabetic.
That would be type 2 diabetes. So type 2 is the one where you get it from sugar. This type 1 diabetes has nothing to do with diet, nothing whatsoever. It's just an autoimmune disease, just like arthritis, where your immune system attacks your pancreas.
So somebody can be struck down in their prime.
Yes.
Because they decided to go in for that first kiss.
Because
they decided
kiss.
To kiss the hoary girl or advance themselves in their degree by kissing the professor with bee stings all over their dick.
Right. Interesting, and it may make us think twice about how seriously we take things like mono infection. I know there's always stories of, and this used to be quite commonplace, you would be in a neighborhood, one of the kids in the neighborhood would get chickenpox, you'd go send your kid to play with that kid because it's better to get chickenpox when you're young, get it over with, you get them infected, then they're immune for the rest of their life. I don't know anything but colloquially.
I don't know where you grew up.
Really? That doesn't happen in Germany?
No.
That's not uncommon.
You just get the vaccine.
That's not that uncommon, like, is to say, hey, we want to make sure that they don't get,
it's
this as a child.
It's usually true that you have, when you get all these diseases, it's better to get them early on
yes,
in childhood.
Especially chicken. Chickenpox can actually be life-threatening if you get it as an adult. As a kid, it's just annoying, you know?
Yeah, I got chickenpox when I was a kid.
Yeah, and so I would wonder if colloquially people are doing that to some extent with mono, and to think about maybe we absolutely don't want to do that. But then also, if this is the case, and we find out that mono is not only responsible for some of these autoimmune diseases, it might be solely responsible for some of them. It might be the only cause, if not the majority of cause. I wonder if we then start treating mono more like an epidemic. We start saying this is something we need. We can't just allow it to spread through a population, whether it's vaccines, whether it's quarantine, whether it's isolation. We need to find a way to completely stop the spread of this.
I had mono in college and in the army because apparently kissing disease, I don't know.
So that's the 2 points in your life when you kissed?
Well, the doctor had said, yes, those are the 2 points where I can trace back to where I kissed somebody. Anyhow, the doctor told me at the time that if you get mono as a child, as most people do who don't exhibit symptoms, it's like chicken pox. In fact, when you're a child, you don't exhibit symptoms at all. Is it
mono?
Better?
Really?
Is it possible? And maybe this doctor, maybe this medical professional
maybe
was the Andrew Wakefield of fucking mono.
Maybe he just meant it's not as bad.
No, that's what they usually say, that you said no symptoms as a child. You think you're under the weather for a couple of days.
Okay, so it does affect you. It just doesn't
affect
you.
Yeah, but like not enough to trace it back.
Gotcha.
So in that way, is it better to give mono to children?
No.
Why?
No.
Well, so they get it out of their system, so they can't exhibit symptoms when they're older.
Well, it's the training of the immune system. So I think we'd have to figure out what the exact cause is. But if your immune system is finding a specific binding site relative to that particular virus, and that binding site mimics something in your body, and it's training your body to attack itself, I don't imagine it would matter when you got it or how bad your reaction is. Assuming you had an immune response to it, I would think it would cause that problem. Now, obviously, you're going to have to say there's a genetic predisposition or some kind of environmental factors, right? Because not everybody who has mono then gets an autoimmune disease. So we have to have some kind of confounding factors, right?
Well, doesn't getting chickenpox as an adult cause a host of health complications?
Yeah. But that's...
You're right. My example, you're right. Dick joke. Yeah. You're right. I'm sorry. I brought up a valid point.
Would be interesting to see how this works. You guys might have remembered a story we covered that Radiolab covered that was very, very interesting called Alpha Gal, which is about a whole different form of immune reaction in which a particular tick, the Lone Star tick, bites somebody, and because of a mammalian protein that is found in all essentially red meat, all mammals, except for us, because of that being introduced to your immune system then learns to fight it. And then anytime you have red meat after getting bitten by this tick, you essentially have a severe allergic reaction. Your body goes into crazy shock and your immune system goes after it. And that means that those people now are effectively allergic to red meat.
Why are the only meat eater without Alpha Gal?
It's actually a really interesting story. We're not sure 100% why this happened, but we know it happened more recently in hominid evolution because chimps still have it, and so we don't. And there's actually a talk because you can find the evidence of this particular protein in dentin from teeth in semi-fossilized materials. So there is this idea going on in human paleontology and human paleoanthropology where we're going to go back and look at all the different fossils to see when this protein suddenly goes away and to see if we see a correlation with something or we can figure out how or why this happened. Right now, we don't know. We don't know why
it happened. Enjoy your barbecue.
Yeah. Well, don't
be condescending because I will. And I won't do it because you said it sarcastically.
It is pretty funny because it's happening a lot in the South. And so it's like people who really, like, they live by their barbecue.
They go hunting and they get it.
Yeah, so very, very interesting stuff. Maybe we need to be a lot more careful with mono. Maybe we just need to figure out what are those other confounding factors that make somebody go from just having mono to having one of those autoimmune diseases. In any case, I have nothing but sympathy for anybody with any of those diseases. They are all horrible, most specifically MS. And hopefully we can figure out how to keep that from happening next time so we don't have people's lives ruined by a single disease they got when they were 10.
You know, I'm mock... But, like, I have a very irregular bowel schedule. I might have Crohn's disease, and, like, I feel like I'm about to
find out. I think
that
would be different. I don't think that's how that works.
I'm wearing an adult diaper right now. Don't tell me that's not how it works.
All right, let's move right on to I Call BS.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
All right, I Call BS is a game where I read 4 science news articles, and my panelists compete to see which ones are real. And which ones are BS, standing for bad science? Are you guys ready to play?
Yes, I've been wheeled out to compete. I feel like Tyrion Lannister about to fight the mountain.
I'm a good mountain.
the intellectual mountain known as Professor.
I'm a mountain range, dude.
All right, article number one. Researchers have just discovered that the Bajau people of Southeast Asia, known for their incredible ability to freedive for extended periods of time, have much larger lungs than the average person. Now, real quick, you guys might have seen videos of these people. They're amazing. They can freedive for many minutes at a time. They essentially just sink to the bottom, and they are a nomadic sea people who literally like live on boats and stilted houses, and they go freediving all day long, 8 hours a day, and get things like sea cucumbers and urchins and all this stuff off the seafloor, which they then eat or sell. It's part of their lifestyle and has been for a very long time. They're essentially superhumans. If you watch what they can do and how long they stay underwater and how deep they dive and how easy it seems to come to them, it's amazing. It is beyond what we as normal humans can do, even with a lifetime of practice. Question is, did researchers just find out that they have much larger lungs than the average person? Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. I've seen their body frame. They can't have much larger lungs. You know, they're Asian people. But I think that the reason and the key to their success in the fact that they are Asian, in the same way that Kobayashi can out-eat any 350-pound dude in hot dogs.
Okay, you think they just like, practice really hard?
I think it's just a work ethic thing, okay. And honestly a determination thing.
Yeah, a fear of shame.
Yes, I feel like, listen, I will kill myself if I fail. So yeah. If I make the stakes really high for everything I do, I will succeed a lot.
And Dr. Ava?
This is probably science.
All right, article number two. Scientists have found a way to make your body change colors if you have cancer. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. I don't know if you know this, but the Blue Man Group is actually a rotating hospice of individuals.
It started out when somebody brought in some buckets to cheer them up. Just pound on these for a while.
No, we're actually blue naturally, yeah. And holy shit, we're all drummers.
All right, and Dr. Ava.
I mean, hasn't that been happening all along? So you test for different kinds of tissues by some contrast?
No, it causes your body to literally change
like
colors.
Like your skin?
Yes.
The whole, all of your skin?
I'm not saying all or not all, but it causes your skin to change colors.
I think that's science because it's probably science.
People with chemo look very sickly, so.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, both of you missed the easy joke, which is, yes, dead people do change different colors.
Oh, guys, you're really the worst this time.
Whoa. I made a lovable blue man group. He just made us sick. You're going to die, son of a bitch.
Yeah, and you're on quite the high horse because I don't quite remember the conversation, but I'm pretty sure you were making fun of people with MS earlier. All right, article number three. A new study suggests that for the past 200,000 years, wherever humans go, they cause a mass extinction of megafaunal mammals. Damien, is this science or bad science?
How many years again?
200,000.
I'm going to say it's bad science because the Earth is flat and we've only been doing it for 6,000 years.
All right. And Dr. Ava.
I mean, look at Damien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got I've been science. Doing it.
He's been killing a bunch of animals, or is that what you're saying?
No, they just all scatter.
Oh, okay.
And run into the ocean.
Yes, my sexuality frightens many.
So is that true? Is
yeah,
that, okay,
it's
right.
Science.
All right, and lastly, article number four. A new study shows that contracting melanoma increases your risk of Alzheimer's later on in life. Damien, is this science or bad science?
Now, we all know that a lot of minorities in America die sooner. So I feel like this is a causation of correlation. Like if you are of Mexican descent, if you are of African-American descent, if you're of Pacific Islander descent, typically you don't have as long of a lifespan in America.
Okay, so you don't get to the age where you get Alzheimer's.
So what I'm saying is this causation correlates a lot of rich white people who are reaching Alzheimer's age because heart disease isn't taking them beforehand.
Gotcha. So are you saying bad science or are you saying good science?
I'm going to say this is science. I'm going to say you whiteys do it to yourself.
We gringos?
Yes. You wettas, do it to yourself.
Well, yeah, thank you for making that feminine. All right, and Dr. Ava.
I think this is science too.
All right, let's go back and see how you guys did. Follow along at home and see how you did. Article number one. Researchers have just discovered that the Bajau people of Southeast Asia, known for their incredible ability to freedive for extended periods of time, have much larger lungs than the average person. Damien thinks this is false. Ava thinks this is true. And this one is bad science.
Oh, damn it.
They actually found that they have a huge spleen.
Whoa.
Yeah, so the spleen is significant because the organs role in the human dive response. So it occurs when your face, once your face gets submerged in water and you hold your breath, Your heart rate slows and your blood vessels in your extremities constrict and the spleen contracts, releasing oxygenated red blood cells and making more oxygen available to the bloodstream.
That's so cool.
The spleen is almost like your reserve tank that you keep in your body.
Wow.
Much more so than your lungs, which once you breathe out, that air is gone, right? Your spleen actually holds in a bunch of oxygenated blood. Man.
My brother doesn't have a spleen anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, don't go diving with that guy.
It also means that the women in this tribe actively selected for dudes with huge spleens.
Yes. Well, no, actually, believe it or not, Damien's exactly correct. Because one of the things, think about it from a researcher point of view. You look at their spleen, you go, these guys dive really far. They have these big spleens. That must be why. But is what caused what? Is it that a lifetime of diving and expand your spleen until that's right? So they
I think being the diving champ is like being the quarterback of the high school football team. Like basically that dude's genes.
Yeah.
They have specially designed shirts with cutouts for their spleen to show cleavage or spleenage as they call it. So they actually wanted to figure it out. What is it, genetics that are predisposing this, or is this a phenotypic response to their lifestyle? So they looked at different people within the Bajau population, including the non-diving members of the society, and those people also had the same hugely enlarged spleen.
What do the non-diving members
say? The diving is usually restricted to the men who are doing the diving for, it's kind of like their hunter-gatherer.
The women also have largest spleen?
Yes, and the men that aren't doing the diving, because not 100% of the population does this activity. You know, a lot of them do, but that's not everybody. They all seem to show the enlarged spleen, greatly enlarged, by the way, up to 50% larger. They show this greatly enlarged spleen.
Like, and that's without performance-enhancing bees.
Yeah,
like
that's exactly. That means that this is most likely a genotypic response, because even the people who aren't doing the activity have the advantage, which would only really make sense if there's a different gene frequency, and they actually have found a specific gene within that population that appears to be responsible for it.
It's very, Gene very Wilder, cool. By the way. That's the gene.
Very cool, because it means that's one of those things. I always love it, whether it's the Highland Peruvians who can digest arsenic where it would kill the rest of us because they have a genetic predisposition for it because there's arsenic in their water. There's other Highland adaptations, including red blood cells and a bunch of different stuff. I always love it when any group essentially gains a superpower from their weird genetics. Article number two, scientists have found a way to make your body change colors if you have cancer. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science, and it's a very interesting project. One big issue with cancer is there are a lot of cancers, breast cancer, skin cancer, a lot of them, whereby if you catch it early, you have like a 98-99% survival rate. Essentially, if you catch it in the early stages, you're fine. However, you let that get to the later stages, you have a 15-20% survival rate. So it's a really big deal, and not to mention, the amount of treatment you need is exponentially greater the longer you go.
Without making any sort of Patrick Swayze joke, with pancreatic cancer, is there a stage or a time you can catch it to where, like, you just happened to go to the doctor on that day and he happened to order that scan? Is it just that small of a window?
Yes, you can. You absolutely can. Mostly it's right after you've just ripped out the opponent's throat with that throat grabbing move on the coast of the lake. Yeah.
So if on the set of Roadhouse, he had gotten tested,
then he'd be fine. The earlier you catch it, the better, almost always. So that is a big deal. And for some of these cancers, it's a huge deal. It's the difference between, oh, here's a quick operation and sorry, better write your will. So very, very big deal. And what these researchers found is one of the inclinations, one of the things that tip us off to early cancer is a surge of calcium in the blood. Now, that has to do with the way cancer is metabolizing, a few other things, but that is an early sign of cancer. Now, we don't monitor our blood on a daily basis enough to notice this, right? What they developed was this kind of patch that they can put. It's an implant that goes underneath your skin, and it constantly monitors blood calcium levels. So when your blood has too much calcium in it, indicating that you have a cancer, the implant signals to the body to produce melanin in the skin directly above the implant, causing what looks like a mole, not like a physical mole, just like a coloration, like a big freckle. And so basically, you look down at your wrist, see this freckle, it's like, oh, my cancer light went off. I gotta go get maintenance.
But if you're in Ireland, like, how do you tell?
Yeah,
like,
that's
if you're
true. Very, very true. Very interesting stuff. Article number three, a new study suggests that for the past 200,000 years, wherever humans go, they cause a mass extinction of megafauna right behind them.
It's because they bring smoking everywhere we go, right?
Damien thought this was false. Dr. Ava thought this one was true. And this one is science.
Woo!
And of course it's fucking true.
This article came out and it had to do with,
they compared correlations of megafaunal animals once human beings got there. We know megafauna goes extinct essentially once humans get there. Got to Australia. Boom, megafauna goes away. They used to have 25-foot monitor lizards, giant kangaroos. They're gone. Get to Southeast Asia. Boom, megafauna's gone. Asia gone. New world, complete decimation. Huge wipeout of all the native megafaunal species within a few thousand years. In fact, we see things like mammoths and mastodons not only go extinct, but the only places they exist, they live in places like Wrangell Island up to not that long ago, like 1500 BC. We still had mammoths on Wrangell Island. North of Russia, so kind of in that almost.
We got it by a rope.
But they survived. They survived. People would be like, maybe it's climate change. They survived the climate just fine. The only thing that didn't survive is when people finally got to the island. That's the only thing that killed them. And that tends to be the story over and over again. This new study looks at Africa 200,000 years ago and found a huge decrease in megafauna right around that time, really coinciding with the advance of Homo sapiens and the spread of them through Africa. It seems that wherever we go, we kill all the big things. That makes total sense to me. The megafaunal extinctions in North America and Europe have always made sense to me as a product of human hunting. We are too smart for our own good. We're too smart for animals because we can trick them and make tools and stuff, but we're not smart enough to know not to kill them all, and so we end up getting ourselves in a lot of trouble.
How many megafauna have we killed a la boxing kangaroo match? We get a human versus how many humans in a boxing ring versus a mastodon.
Listen, I didn't want to bring this up, but the news lied. That's how Steve Irwin actually died.
Mainstream media at it again.
I mean, it was a stingray barb to the heart, but few people know that kangaroos cheat when they box. slip the old stinger in there, eh?
You know, you can't get good refs for a good interspecies bout.
Who's Steve Irwin?
Steve Irwin? Mm-hmm. He was the crocodile hunter. He was an Australian guy who... Anyway.
Have you heard of the show Duck Dynasty? Australia's Duck Dynasty, but way more reputable.
And lastly, a new study shows that contracting melanoma increases your risk of Alzheimer's later in life. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is bad science. The opposite. Apparently, there have been previous studies showing that contracting non-melanoma skin cancer disease reduced the risks of contracting Alzheimer's, and not just in the way Damien presupposed that they died before they could get it. It actually was related to age lived to and whatnot. This study actually looked at 60 to 88-year-olds, and they looked at people who had the actual melanoma form of skin cancer and found that they had severely reduced risks of Alzheimer's later in life. It may be one of those things where something bad happens to you and it prevents something worse happening to you later on.
You get bit by a radioactive spider and you can prevent Dr. Doom from killing you later.
Or maybe you get melanoma because you're outside a lot.
And that helps and stop. That helps. Yeah, that could be.
You get herpes early and it prevents you from being lame.
Well, after the adjustments, they found that malignant melanoma was associated with a 61% reduced risk of developing Alzheimer's later in life. For the basal cell carcinomas, the reduced risk was 82 and 92%. So significant reduction in risk of getting Alzheimer's based on having cancer earlier in life. Again, who knows about causation correlation, but it would be funny if all of a sudden tanning salons saw a boost in their business. A bunch of
from
old people.
60-year-olds.
Yeah, they're like, I don't want this to happen, man.
It's been quite a while, but we ragged on the tanning salon industry for quite a while.
Because it causes cancer. It is worse than tobacco.
1% there's nothing per use, you
can,
right?
There's almost nothing you can do that is worse for you than going to a tanning bed. It is worse than smoking. It is worse than doing drugs. With almost certainty, depending on the amount of melanin in your skin, you can expect to get cancer from a tanning booth based on the number of times you go. You could say...
A few times
increases your risk of skin cancer by 75%. What? And then it's a couple percent each time you go after that. And so it gets to a point where if you go enough, you are inevitably going to get cancer from that tanning.
That's really, really sad to hear. Because when I was a kid growing up, they recommended going to the tanning salon.
Yeah, and they were even worse back then.
But just because the winters were so long.
No, I understand why. Obviously they didn't have malice in doing so. They were just misinformed as to the dangers. But it's really, really bad. People like John McCain have tried to get them banned. They've only succeeded in being able to ban them for people under 18
Of course, pasty-ass John McCain. Yeah. The whitest man in Arizona.
They've been able to ban them for people under 18, but it's hard to get this message out. It's funny because it's not like it's a huge lobby. It's just one of those things that people don't want to hear about in the same way they didn't want to hear about cigarettes or something else.
Yeah, but they've also gone out of favor, right? It's not...
Not for something that causes this much damage. If you think about it, it's way more carcinogenic than cigarettes. And think of the public perception of cigarettes versus tanning booths. If you saw a 17-year-old going into a tanning booth, you'd be like, oh, she seems vain.
Yeah, but nobody gets addicted to tanning booths.
I don't know. See some of those leather-faced chicks from the news.
Our fish and ourselves are loaded with plastic because we can't stop having awesome exfoliants for our skin. So, no, I don't. This isn't outside the realm of possibility at all.
avoid tanning booths at all costs. I had a girlfriend who worked at a tanning booth for a while. I went a few times, so I've with my pasty ass, I've definitely increased my risk. So don't think I'm
So you dumped her after you found out that there's...
Yeah, I was like, get the hell out of here, you cancer-causing witch. I don't need this. But it's fairly serious. Avoid that if you can. But if you want to avoid Alzheimer's, maybe you go get a bunch of tans to do it. Maybe you're 65 years old and fuck it. I'll risk the cancer to be able to know who my kid is tomorrow.
I'm moving to Florida.
Yeah. All right. Well, congratulations, Dr. Ava, for smashing Damien. Just smashing it.
It was a tie. It was a fucking tie again, and only because of your bullshit rule.
That the tie goes to the scientist? That's not a bullshit rule, David.
No. Bullshit rule.
Do you yell every time that a runner and makes it to the base at the same time as the ball comes?
I don't.
Why does the tie go to the runner? Why? It's not fair to Damien.
No, I don't, because both people get a chance to bat, theoretically. Like, I'm going to
go grind up some rhino horn and feel better about myself.
Oh, I will. I'm beasting the shit out of my dick. Then I'm going to get a fucking doctorate. In handwriting, handwriting interpretation, and I'm going to be Dr. Ava's mortal enemy, more so than I am now.
All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 223, where you learned why handwriting experts might be completely full of shit, how the monovirus might cause 7 different autoimmune diseases, why the Bajau people are able to hold their breath for so long, a new method scientists have of detecting cancer early by making your skin change colors, why humans have been killing all the large animals around them for more than 200,000 years, and how melanoma can actually decrease your risk of Alzheimer's disease. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 224.
Dick Beasting isn't just how I get aroused. It's also my porn name.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.